stand by. Good day, and welcome to the MIT Alumni Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Ms. Julie Serrero. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today. We have about 70 people who have RSVP'd to be on this call. There's a group of us sitting in the Z Center conference room, and I would like to introduce those people who are around the table. Actually, I'd like to ask them to introduce themselves. And Candace Royer as well is joining us from Memorial Drive. So, Candace, if you'd like to introduce yourself first and your role, and then we will go around the table as well. Then I will open it up with a couple opening statements, and then we will turn the call over to questions. So, Candace, please.
Candace Royer, Associate Director of Development for DAPR.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And around the table, I'll start with...
Phil Clay, Chancellor.
Catherine Leedy, Director of Alumni Relations.
I'm Teresa Lee from the Annual Fund.
Maggie Brazelius, Director of Communications for the Alumni Association.
John Benedict, Assistant Director of Athletics.
Thank you. Let me start by making a couple opening remarks, including an overview of DAPR funding sources and expenses. I have in front of me, and what I'm speaking from, is a pie chart that gives an overview of our funding. And I think it needs to be very clear about how DAPR comes together and is made whole as it relates to these budget decisions. First of all, 46% of our budget is from institutional support. 32% of our budget is dependent upon the revenue stream we have, primarily with Z Center membership with HFC, as well as with any rentals that we put forth and end up making money from. 8% comes from student life fee, which is sometimes variable, depends, sometimes it's flat, sometimes it goes up, et cetera, but it's 8% of what we do. And then 14% comes from the revenue we make through funding and through discretionary payout. That's the picture of the funding sources that make DAPR whole. When we look at our spending breakdown by program, and again, a pie chart is what I'm speaking from, close to 50% of our budget goes to varsity athletics. According to the pie chart, it's 45%, but what's not factored in there are some of the facility maintenance fees, some of our large capital equipment purchases, et cetera. They tend to be included in the pile, what we call DAPR recreation, or that part of the pie chart, which constitutes 39% of our budget expenses. And then 16% is related to physical education. When we look at this overview, and with close to 50% of our budget being spent in athletics, I should also point out it has the lowest number of participants when you consider the full programming and scope of what DAPR has to offer. Obviously, given those facts, we had to look closely at how we're operating in our varsity athletic programs. This, coupled with an historical overview that has been asking for over a decade, how DAPR can continue to sustain, maintain, and provide a quality experience with 41 varsity athletic programs, has really put us at an intersection to make some of these very difficult and, I would say, painful decisions. I would like now to open this to questions, but I am going to ask you to be respectful of the following. We will take your questions in order. If you have a follow-up question, either based upon my answer or there were two parts to your question, I'm asking if you would please hold your follow-up question to either the end of the call, or if we don't have time to answer it, or you would like more detail, please feel free to email me at jserrero, S-O-R-I-E-R-O, at mit.edu. I will now open the call to questions, and James, I believe I turn it over to you at this point.
Thank you. At this time, if you have a question, press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 if you have a question. And we'll take our first question today from Andre Jaglom with Tenenbaum Helpert.
Hi, this is Drew Jaglom, class of 74. I was a skier. My son, class of 05, was a rower. First of all, Julie, you and I have exchanged some emails, and I just want to say I appreciate the the exchange and the time you took to do that. My issue with this decision, I don't think, is frankly with DAPR. I have no question that the decisions as to which teams were cut were well considered and done appropriately, and I have no issues with that. My concern, frankly, is with the decision that was made to impose a 15% across the board cut to all programs. I assume, for example, or at least I hope, that there wasn't in this time of need a 15% cut in student financial aid. That's something that is critically important if the Institute is going to be able to continue to attract the best and the brightest students. And by the same token, it seems to me that given the magnitude of the cuts in the Institute's budget that were necessary, a $485,000 reduction that results in the loss of athletic opportunities that I think are so critical to the balance and physical and mental health of the student body at MIT is a drop in the bucket and penny wise and pound foolish. And my question really goes to the administration decision to apply this kind of a cleaver rather than a scalpel to the budgets, with the result that I think we are losing something that made MIT really unique in the opportunities it provided to its students, and they're opportunities that I think are really very important to the culture and balance of MIT.
This is Philip Clay, the Chancellor, and I want to address this question. The cuts are really painful, but I think the larger point is that the cut that we're making at MIT starting July 1, 2009 is part of a what we expect will be a 15% cut across the Institute. Now, when I say across the Institute, there are some exceptions. One exception is financial aid. We are not cutting financial aid. In fact, next year we will increase financial aid by 10%, owing to the needier situations that our students bring, and our commitment to need-blind admission. We're also not giving most of the faculty or staff a salary increase, and not giving an increase is, in a sense, giving a cut. We are maintaining support for the faculty. We are maintaining support for student access. But everything else is subject to review, and we expect a 15% cut. So the question is, how are cuts made? And I'm quite delighted at the care and attention that DAPR has given to how it will take its cuts. They could have imposed a simple cut across the entire department. But if that had been done, what that would have done is to weaken and degrade all of the components of the programs, including all of the varsity sports. They've had in place since 2003 a process for reviewing the health and vitality of each sport. And we have gotten input from the visiting committee, from review committees, all of which involve alumni, that maintaining 41 sports is not sustainable. So it should not be a surprise that as we face a budget cut, reviewing that data from since 2003 to select how we reach the budget targets but maintain the integrity of the varsity program, it should not be surprising that they would take these cuts. Now, we believe that now that 8 of the 41 sports have been reduced, we will be in a position now to make the case for maintaining the strength of the 33 rather than trying to explain how 41 sports were degraded. I think this is a wise, though painful, decision. We have selected sports that I think, while valuable and helpful at different times and for some students, they do, eliminating these sports do now allow us to say that our varsity program will not be strengthened and will not be weakened. Now, keep in mind, 41 sports means that we, along with Harvard, and I don't know what Harvard is doing given their situation, we had more varsity sports by far than any institution we competed with. We had cases of varsity teams that did not have varsity competition, where we could not fully field a team, where it was relatively expensive for a small number of students compared to other teams where large numbers of students were complaining about legitimate complaints about uniforms, equipment, and the like. As painful as this is, I think that the that DAPR has done a very good job of meeting their part of the budget cut, and everybody will suffer except student access. We don't intend to impair the ability of students because of financial situations, including more serious financial situations, to continue to come to MIT.
Is there another question?
We have a question from Tom Stagliano.
Yes, thank you, A.D. Serrero, A.D. Lawyer, and Coach Benedict, and Drew, and others that I know. I'm class of 73, undergrad, class of 78 as a graduate student, and I was around the athletic department quite a bit in both hockey, soccer, and community sports, as well as intramurals. Again, I understand the pressure that the athletic department's been under, going back to when Dick Hill was the AD, where essentially I disagree in one regards, and that is I believe, and I have done my checking over time, that the administration at MIT is sort of zero-funded or level-funded for the athletic department going back to about 1988, in which there really has been no fat in the budget at all, and you have transferred things to their budget they weren't really under their budget previously. The physical plant, people were taken from physical plant, put it under the AD budget, athletic department budget. You built a $50 million complex, but then you saddled the athletic department with its utilities and maintenance when they really have no revenue stream, and you didn't get the revenue stream you probably expected by increasing money from the community. So therefore, the crunch then goes to the athletes. I would maintain that MIT students have always strived for excellence, and therefore just having a club or just having an intramural is good because it gives them breadth, but they want excellence in other things, and those who come to MIT wanting excellence in either skiing or pistol or hockey or soccer or whatever would like that ultimate goal, and being able to be on a varsity is part of that and is part, an essential part of student life. My question then is, how do we go forward? Because it seems to me that the biggest thing that's being cut by taking these teams and saying they're no longer a varsity, they could come back, and then most of them I think will be, as clubs. And so what's being cut is the paid coaches, who in most cases are part-time coaches, or their responsibilities are being changed. And the other place is on transportation. For example, I'm assuming the pistol team isn't going to be traveling down to Tennessee for some of their tournaments anymore, unless they pay for it on themselves as a club. So how do we now take the step to take these eight sports and make them viable clubs? For example, hockey has been a club for the last, since 1975 when I was on the team as a graduate student. And in fact, I support graduate students on club teams and club teams being considered the equivalent of a varsity, because you have 6,000 graduate students, you have 4,000 undergraduates. The graduate students also need that stress relief, and they are also striving for excellence. And now I'm applauding that the women's hockey team will probably go back to club, and the graduate students and the undergrads can be back together and go forward into various leagues. So how do we now? So the question is, how do we take that step forward to making them viable or helping them stay viable clubs at the pinnacle level within MIT?
Thank you, Tom. I'll address your question. You and I have exchanged emails as well, so I've appreciated your communication on this previous to this call. I agree with you on a number of things. Number one, we do not have any fat in our budget. Number two, we want the experience to be continually striving for excellence. And number three, our club program is robust, healthy, and meets the needs of a tremendous amount of students as well as the MIT community. When we examined this, we really took a hard look about what defines a varsity experience. And one of the things we found with some of these programs we have decided to discontinue is that their primary competition was against other club teams. So although MIT was supporting it at a varsity level, much like you say, with coaching, transportation, athletic training support, etc., our competition wasn't doing the same. So we really, some people might say we split hairs, but we really looked at what it means to have and support financially a varsity program and what that varsity experience should be about. I hope that a number of these teams make the decision to continue in their capacity of a critical mass of students interested in competing or learning or developing their skills in that particular area and taking that to the club level. We have met, myself, John Benedict, and our other assistant athletic director, Barb Bullock, who was out of town in a meeting, who just joined us late, have met with each and every team about forming a club, and there's a tremendous amount of interest. We are not going to impose on our club sport council that they have to assume all eight of these programs into a club level of support. I think there needs to be a critical mass of students that come forward and say they want to be a club. And that's generally how our club sports operate. It's managed, it's governed, it's administered by the students themselves. Right now, two groups have come forward. The Pistol Group and Men's Ice Hockey have already expressed an interest in becoming a club. Women's Ice Hockey already had a club team in place. So I think there's an avenue for some of these places, some of these students to go. In terms of funding it, our club sports operate independently of what we do in DAPR. Our cycling team, for example, raises money, and that money goes directly to cycling. So do they get a certain stipend from the club sport council, and then their additional costs are charged to this revenue stream they have through alumni donations, and in their case, even some sponsorship. So I'm hoping that some alumni might come forward and express an interest in supporting these programs as they move and transition to the club level, and our alumni will support them in this transition. I also recognize that this part of this transition has been imposed by DAPR, and therefore we will work with the team so that we will make sure that ice time is available to the ice hockey teams, that the pistol range is maintained. We're going to try to make this transition as smooth as possible, but as I said, the most important piece is a critical mass of students to come forward and express an interest in doing this.
Mr. Stagliano, do you have anything further?
Just a follow-up, A.D. Soro, thank you so much. I do want to, one quick, it's not really a follow-up, sort of follow-up comment. I am appreciative of the fact that you made the statement you want to make sure that, for example, with ice hockey, I'll give you an example, will still have the ice time available if they become a viable club or stay a viable club, because that's essential. They can't, and I'm hoping that also means they don't have to pay for that ice time. And I'm going to go back to the 70s and the early 80s when I was around MIT all the time. The athletic department at that point was very adamant. They don't rent out facilities. They would donate it to, for example, if some school or club some outside activity needed the space, and then they would figure out a way for compensation. Sometimes they swapped space. I remember Boston University.
Tom, I'm going to interrupt you there. Excuse me, but we had talked about no follow-up. So before we delve too much into the history of it, let me address it very quickly and then make sure there's enough time on this call for every person to have a chance to be heard. We have said to the ice hockey men that we met with that if they wanted to form a club, we would work with them for a year or two transitioning into club level. Essentially, I think that means that we would be willing to give them ice time. What I made very clear to them is we don't want to give away ice time, quote unquote, and find out two people show up for practice. Running the ice is a revenue stream for us. We do it around our practices. We have done it around practices, our club competition, our phys ed classes, et cetera. That is a viable option for us. But again, we recognize the imposition of this and the importance of a smooth transition for our students. So we will work with the teams to make this transition as smooth as possible. Thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question will come from Mike Burns with College Gymnastics Association.
So thanks for letting me be on this call. I appreciate it. And I know these cuts are hard to do. And I've been involved in the sport of gymnastics a long time. And when I was competing back in the 70s, we had over 150 programs. Now we're down to, without MIT now, only 17.
Mike, excuse me, Mike, are you an alum?
I'm not.
Then I would defer your question to the end of the call if possible. This is an alumni association call, and I would prefer that this line stay open for our alumni and their questions.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yep.
Next we'll hear from Spencer Webb with Antenasis Incorporated.
Hi there, Spencer Webb here, and it's Antenasis, but thanks. Everybody gets it wrong. thank you for holding this roundtable discussion. I represent some of our members are on this call, I know, and we have over 200 alumni eagerly following this on our mailing list. One of the things we're very interested in understanding is where the criteria in the varsity sport health and vitality process came from, and we'd like to see that data to understand how these choices were made. Frankly, the pistol team has been, in fact, year before last was national champion. I was a member of the pistol team from 79 to 83. We set national records. We've sent members of pistol to the Olympic development team. We currently have many, many alumni still active on a national competitive basis for such a strong and vital program, which has also achieved parity with, I think, recently more than 50% of the team members being female. It's almost the poster child for collegiate sports, and getting cut like this was like a punch in the stomach for many of us. So how can we get a hold of the copy of this report and understand the criteria that were used in order to make this cut?
Spencer, I'm going to answer your question very quickly, and then I'm going about specific to pistol, and then I'll turn it over to John Benedict, who was involved in developing the health and vitality report. The issue that surrounded pistol is that almost all of their competition are club teams. And as I said earlier in the call, defining what it means to support a team at a varsity level, we look closely at the opponents and what the competition was bringing to the experience our students were having. We felt that a club-level competition for our varsity program, quote-unquote varsity program, would mirror exactly the type of competition they're getting on a consistent basis from other schools, but those schools are not supporting pistol at a varsity level. So one of the driving considerations for pistol was really the level of competition and the fact that almost all of their competition is club level. I will turn it over to John, who will speak a little bit more specifically about the health and vitality report.
Hi. Hello, Spencer. John.
Hi. How are you, John?
I'm doing fine. Good to hear from you again. The health and vitality process was developed out of the encouragement of actually several visiting committees in our own strategic plan to evaluate how well our programs are doing. And in that, we came up with the elements of it through work with the other coaches, students, administrators, and we all came to an agreement on what those elements would be. The access to the data, Spencer, at the very beginning of the reviews with each one of the teams, it was agreed by the committee and the department that those results would remain confidential to the administration and to the coach themselves, because that gave the committee real freedom to be able to express their honest opinions about how well the team was doing. If at some point in time through this, the committee decides or the department decides to release that or release part of the information, I think that is probably a discussion for the department to have and actually the athletic board.
I don't quite have the time frame when the report was compiled. Can you tell me, John, what pistol coach was giving input to that report?
Actually, it was Will Hart, And Will was actually an active member of the review board at the time. So he actually had to step out of the role as a committee member and present to the committee his sport. So, and that was, I think we did them alphabetically, Spencer, so I'm thinking it was the last round that we were in, which
okay.
would have been, yeah, 06, ending in 06.
Well, the I'm reflecting
Spencer,
the...
Spencer, I want to keep the line open for calls. If there's a follow-up, would you mind holding till the end of the call?
No problem.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Julie Arsenault with Accenture.
Hi, Julie. Sorry, this is Julie. I am class of 08, so I'm a recent alum, and I was on the ski team and actually the sailing team all 4 years while I was at MIT. So my question kind of relates a little bit back to Drew's initial statement there that, you know, kind of the sacrifice that we're making here with cutting these eight teams and saving, you know, $485,000, while that is a large amount of money, you know, I think it is quite a significant sacrifice and that, you know, maybe the two don't really balance. But I understand that, you know, DAPR's facing a lot of institutional pressure, a lot of budget pressure, and has been facing those pressures for quite some time now. And so I think, you know, kind of what I'm hearing is basically a fundamental disagreement in DAPR's strategy here, where, you know, the current leadership is expressing this view that we want, you know, 33 strong teams instead of 41 maybe not so strong teams. But I think, you know, hearing from my fellow former teammates and other students at MIT, as well as some of the alumni on this call, I think there's, you know, a really strong feeling that having those 41 sports is, you know, an enormous asset to each and every student's experience, each and every participant's experience there. I think it's, you know, a big asset for when people look at MIT. I came to MIT so that I could participate on the sailing team and the ski team. So kind of getting to my question, sorry for the long-winded approach here. Kind of two parts here. You know, how did the leadership come up with this strategy to have fewer, more successful teams? And then secondly, is there anything that, you know, we as alumni can do to make 41 sports sustainable at MIT? You know, does it come down to money? And if so, you know, what are the channels that we can go through to kind of take action here and try to change things?
I know Phil Clay is going to join this answer too, but let me address parts of it, Julie. How did we come to this decision? We took a look at how we spent our money in DAPR, and as I said early in the call, 50% of it went to our varsity athletic programs, close to 50% of it, I should say. And I think knowing that these deep cuts that we're facing us for over the next 3 years, it's $1.46 million, that if you have one particular area that is consuming 50% of your budget, you really have to look closely at what you're doing and how you're operating in that area. We then made a decision that we really need to pull out the health and vitality study and help us define what does that varsity experience really mean. And as I indicated, we felt that there were some things that were important, that they competed against other varsity teams, that there was a roster size that was consistent that would allow our support to help that program develop and flourish. And in some cases, we found there was huge variability in the amount of interest from the students, and that therefore putting a roster together it sometimes was very, very challenging. So given those considerations and given the budget cuts, we really had to look closely at varsity athletics. Furthermore, we really did not think it would be wise to cut the support services around varsity athletics. For example, cut the training room staff, cut the equipment room staff, cut what we're doing that develops a revenue stream that provides 32% of our funding source. We felt that that would be really a very poor decision, in that we couldn't support these broad-based programming without the support services in place. That, yes, we're probably going to get to the point that we are trying to reduce those support services, but we couldn't do it with 41 varsity programs. We had to be careful that we didn't cut what we did for our revenue stream in terms of the Z Center membership and rentals and so on. As I said, it provides 32% of our budget. That's a significant chunk of our budget. So if we cut our hours in the Z Center where people were looking to work out elsewhere, if we rented the pools on a consistent basis that people lost interest in being members of the Z Center, then we would potentially lose that revenue stream, which would mean in the future we'd have to make more significant cuts. So I think that drove us to some of our decisions to look closely at varsity athletics as a starting point. I'll turn it over to Phil now to address it from a bigger picture in the Institute.
Yes. One of the things that we've realized as we plan across the Institute to deal with the 15% budget cut is that we want to be a better place, a place that is still characterized by excellence at the end of it. So all across the Institute, this process of sculpting the various units and programs in order to save and enhance what is excellent and maintain that and cut other things will be the way we keep MIT excellent. Because our working assumption is that this economic crisis is not about belt tightening. It's about the fact that MIT, along with other major universities, have lost 25, 30, or 35% of their endowment income. And for us, that's 22% of the total budget. So we believe that we're in a situation where we are going to be a smaller institution in budget terms, and we want to also be excellent. So again, I appreciate very much DAPR's approach of saying we can maintain excellence of 33 sports. We cannot maintain excellence of 41 sports. The final point I would make has to do with fundraising. We're in the midst of a campaign for students, a campaign that we hope will raise $500 million to support financial aid, student life, and student learning activities. And athletics is a part of that. We find it much more compelling to go out and ask alumni and friends to support us in our strength and excellence rather than to prop us up in ways that would be hard to justify. We want that when you come and talk to our students about their athletic participation, that they're excited and supported in the way they speak about them, not that they are feeling that they're at the beginning of a series of painful cuts that will leave the whole program weaker. So we hope to be in a position to make the case for support based on strength and excellence.
Julie, to answer your second question about what can alumni do to help, we set the bar high to reinstate any of these programs, and we set it high purposefully because we want to see them endowed, so that in a year or two, we are not visiting the same type of decisions again. And I think we would do that if we were trying to reinstate these programs through bridge funding. So the endowment levels are a number that's been out there historically for DAPR for a full-time coach, because we think many of these issues could be resolved if there were some full-time coaching in place. That endowment is $2 million, and the operating endowment is $1 million. And I know, as I said, that bar is very, very high. But in the meantime, I would like to think our alumni might support and allow our programs to thrive at the club level. And as I said, in many cases, they've expressed an interest, or they are already competing against club sports, and it does very little to change the experience our students are having. But we need some funding to make that happen so that the club sports, there's not an imposition on the club sports budget, that it just enhances what we're trying to do in club sports for those respective programs. Next question.
Our next question comes from Henry Dotterer with pros.com.
Hi, Henry Dotterer, class of 1991. I played hockey and baseball all of my 4 years. I was captain of both. Just one comment for what it's worth. On the, I've heard you distinguish several times between teams which compete against varsity organizations and teams that compete against club. As a player on both teams, the baseball being, you know, playing against all varsity Division III when I was there, and the hockey team playing against some Division III and some club teams. I would say that from the players' perspective, at least, there was little or no difference in the entry-level skills required. You couldn't just walk on either of those teams. You had to have played your pretty much your whole life. There was no difference in the level of commitment required. For both teams, you know, we're practicing a couple hours a day, more time on the weekends. And I would say that there wasn't any difference in the competition, the level of the competition. And I think part of the reason for that is that you have, in the case of ice hockey, the Boston area is the top college hockey area in the country. I think if I were to give input, you know, you called for input in your documents. I want to thank you for those, by the way. I read the strategic plan and this reduction document. And, you know, if my initial reaction to this news was that's ridiculous, after reading the documentation that you've shared, you know, I have to say that I'm proud with the approach that you're taking, the sculpting approach, the striving for excellence. So, you know, congratulations on that. If I were to put it in terms of your document, I would say that maybe one consideration you might add, you know, and I would even ask you to reassess the ice hockey situation, is the regional consideration. And I'm not talking about access to practice facilities or how close the competition is. I'm talking about the local factor of that sport. You know, I know that Dartmouth does a lot with skiing. You know, if we were Hawaii, we might be talking about surfing. Boston is hockey. And the club experience, club teams around the Boston area compete at a varsity level. The experience is a varsity experience. That's my perspective as a player.
Henry, I would hope then that if men's ice hockey and they have expressed an interest go to club, then they compete on that club experience, much like you just said, like it's a varsity experience. The obligation, though, is not with DAPR, and in this budget constraint that we have, then we've made the right decision for the entirety of DAPR in that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and you know, that's something that I've grasped on this call. That's true, and I expect the hockey team to survive as a club team. You know, I can guarantee you'll have more than two people on the ice. What I would ask in the transition, and you know, you talked about alumni coming forward. I certainly, you know, I have supported the team. You know, I give my donation each year earmarked for hockey and baseball, and I would continue to do that and even raise it. But what I think would be the responsibility of the administration. You know, as you've pointed out, I mean, it's great news to hear you saying this. You know, the kids that have come in thinking that there's a varsity hockey team, you know, I think there is some obligation to them to have that ice time, at least for the next couple of years, as you said. You know, to have a kid come in with the understanding that there's a team and then, you know, their sophomore year say, all right, you know, pony up some money for that. That wouldn't be great, you know. So I think that we should do. I'm with you. I appreciate the commitment you've expressed in this call. I think we should do everything we can to allow these teams to survive as club teams. And from a historical perspective, I mean, again, hockey in Boston. I don't think it's any coincidence that ice hockey was one of the first teams, one of the first sports at MIT. It's over 100 years. I think it will be around in the future, and I think that, you know, in the broader perspective, it would not be a great legacy for any of us to oversee the period where there was no hockey. You know, I think we should just do everything we can. I understand the money's not there, but let's do everything we can to keep a pulse for all these sports, you know, so that the legacy continues.
I appreciate that, Henry, and I appreciate your continued generosity on behalf of our ice hockey program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question?
Yes, Tom Haffer with Science and Technology Association has our next question.
Hi. This is Tom Haffer, class of 70. I did gymnastics, track, and most of the intramural sports when I was there. I'd start out by saying that, in my view, the key to keeping MIT excellent is by enhancing the student welfare. As far as disposition of funds, $485K in a year is a drop in the bucket of an institution that has a $1 billion annual budget. And frankly, the praise that's been given to Daper for sculpting these cuts and not applying salami slices seems to me to be the opposite of what's been done in the case of the Institute, where they've said, well, okay, Daper, sorry, you just have to take 15% because share the pain. I would suggest that that may be an inappropriate way to allocate budget cuts, especially when we're talking about something that so profoundly affects the welfare of the students and costs a very small amount of the Institute's budget. Apropos of that, I really don't understand the statement that 41 sports, even in good times, are not sustainable. If what you mean by that is that you've never been properly funded, then that's something that needs to be addressed. But I don't see what it is about the mere fact of having 41 sports that's not sustainable. And again, I think that that is a point of pride, or it should be. So finally, getting down to the nub of my question, for the teams that are happy becoming clubs, I certainly have no objection to that, and it may be appropriate in many of those cases. But in the case of gymnastics, I do not see how that's a viable option. You're not going to have a viable club. I don't think they're going to be able to compete against most varsity teams, and in any case, they are certainly not going to be able to go to the nationals, with a sport the size that gymnastics is in this country, is really the only significant competition that you go through in a year. So if I'm missing something, I would like to have that explained to me. But I think that in the case of gymnastics, what you have just done is to kill the program altogether with no hope of ever recovering.
Tom, you might be correct. I can't sit here and say that all of these sports will come back as club. I know we've met with the gymnastics coaches, and they're presenting an idea about keeping the facility open so that our students have an opportunity to at least continue to do some things in the world of gymnastics. But in terms of going out and competing beyond the walls of MIT, you could very well be correct.
I would like to point out that as difficult as these cuts are, 450,000 or so is may look like a drop in the bucket, but keep in mind that we have to take money out of the budget for the entire campus. So I think this is not unreasonable. It's not minuscule. It's painful for Daper, but all units are going to have some pain as well. Like I said, only financial aid is sacred as we go through these budget cuts.
Well, am I correct that the $485,000 per year represents one-half of one-tenth of 1% of the MIT operating budget, and that I would contrast that with the money that's been, shall we say, spent not entirely to the best benefit of the campus in terms of having buildings that were intentionally designed in odd ways, which now have to be repaired and are going through lawsuits and trips to China and things like that, that could very well be set aside for a year and save much more money than what we're talking about.
Well, we are talking about cutting the annual budget by $150 million and $485,000 is just, it's, what, 3%? I mean, it's not. Three-tenths of 1%. But that's, everybody's going to make a contribution, including buildings. We were planning to renovate a major building that's been put on hold. I think all of the trips or other things that you might want to put on the list, they're going to suffer as well.
Well, let me conclude then by saying that you praised the process within Daper of not salami slicing the budget, and yet, with the exception of student admissions, that's precisely what you're telling me you have to do now, and I argue that that is not the way to sculpt a budget cut and to promote the general best interest of the student body.
So noted. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Lisa Well.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I was also on the gymnastics team for 3 of my 4 years. And I guess, you know, I just want to reiterate a lot of the stuff that's been said in terms of, you know, I understand that you're trying to make a decision at the level of DAPR, but, you know, this kind of across-the-board 15% strategy, I mean, there must be areas where there are, you know, more cuts than that that can be taken, you know, considering, you know, facilities and heck, I mean, little things like I get technology review, I suppose, for life. And if you multiply that by all of the alumni and everything, you know, I'm just wondering if it's really in a situation like this, if people shouldn't be kind of getting out the microscope before they, you know, make these types of decisions that really, you know, as everyone has been saying, just deeply affect the quality of the MIT experience. I also am wondering specifically about gymnastics. I mean, as I understand it, our competitors are still varsity. We've had a very strong team. I've been amazed. I'm constantly hearing from Eduardo, the coach, that they are now competing at a national level. I recently was invited back to a meet, and I was just stunned, really, by the level of the skill level of the team. One of the gymnasts this year was, I believe, nationally ranked. I mean, or the Division III Varsity Student of the Year. I'm trying to remember what it was. But it's an outstanding program, and it does seem like a big sacrifice where, you know, I don't know, there just must be something else in the Institute that is waste. I can't believe that in all of MIT that there's not a significant amount of waste. I'm sorry, I'm rambling on, but one more point I want to make really comes back to the beginning of the discussion where you were talking about DAPR having, responsibility for the facilities costs, and I was not aware of that, and if that's an unusual situation to DAPR over other departments, you know, I have to wonder if this is something that you can frankly call the administration on and say, look, this is, you know, all departments are not being addressed equally here.
Well, I can speak to the fact that while we're here discussing the cuts in DAPR, there are other cuts that will go into effect July 1. There have been a number of layoffs across the Institute. We're closing the infirmary during July and August. We have frozen the salary of faculty and staff who make above a certain amount. As I said before, everybody is going to feel a little bit of pain, and we're trying to do it in a way that in the end will make us smaller and leaner, not weaker or less excellent.
If I can address your question about facility costs, and thank you for bringing it up again. DAPR outsources our facility cleanup because our building is open 120 hours a week. So we have a need that's different than many other places on this campus. We have just renegotiated that contract in a way that saves us money for next year. So we were pleased that they were willing to come to the table and talk with us. Our energy costs, though, we do not pay. Those are charged to the Institute, so there's not a way that we can change what we do there. And as I said, with our facility cleaning and maintenance, that the outsourced people have renegotiated that contract. We're saving close to $30,000 a year with them moving forward.
It does sound in a way then that, I mean, the, you know, energy expenses for Ziegler must be astronomical. It just seems to me that DAPR, it sounds like, has been saddled with things that other departments have not been saddled with.
Well, I can't speak for other departments, but I know we're just trying to do the best with the money we've allotted and meet the needs of the budget mandates. I want to point out, too, and perhaps I was remiss in not doing this earlier in the call, every single area of DAPR has been reduced in some capacity, not just varsity athletics. And I think because the emotional decision to discontinue sports is so prevalent, some of the other decisions we have made haven't been as well noted. So I don't want you, anybody our alumni, to think that only athletics is being saddled with this burden. Every single area, from our clubs, intramurals, physical education, sports information, the Z Center, the fitness, everything has contributed in some capacity to this moving forward. I'm noting the time here, and we need to think about wrapping things up. We can extend slightly beyond 1:30, but we might have time for two more questions. And then if there's any additional questions, please feel free to email me what your questions might be or if there's a follow-up. So, James, I think we have time for two more questions.
We'll hear from Lauren Wood with Lincoln Laboratory.
Hi. As you said, I work at Lincoln Laboratory, and I pay a fee to DAPR to use the health facility here. And I want to ask a question related to what things DAPR covers. So here's the way I'm phrasing my question. Are we basically, by cutting these eight teams, are we sacrificing uniforms and coaches for eight teams in order to keep the health club membership fees at, for example, Lincoln Lab, a little bit lower?
No, is the short answer. I'm not sure where I want to go. Most of our costs for our varsity athletic programs are in contest. So it's officials, it's transportation, it's meals. In the case of an overnight trip, it's hotels, et cetera. It accumulates over the course of the season. So it's not about being able to reduce or change a uniform rotation or change the number of T-shirts that our student athletes are getting for practice or competition. It's really a need to meet that budget mandate of 485, coupled with the health and vitality study that questions the sustainability of our 41 programs. So keeping our rates competitive are equally important so that our membership is solid enough. Because I go back to what I said, 32% of our funding sources comes from the membership of the Z Center and our rentals. So we don't want to price ourselves out of business on that one.
Does that also include something like what I pay for the health facility here at Lincoln? Because
yes.
I do write my check to DAPR. That's
yes.
What I'm trying to figure out.
Yes.
Yes.
It does.
Okay, so I think the answer to my question is yes. You could raise the fees at, for example, the health facility club at DAPR as part of a strategy to come up with the money to buy uniforms and coaches for eight additional teams. Am I correct?
We could if we didn't price ourselves out of business.
No, I understand the pricing yourself out of business part. I just wanted to establish the principle at play here. So I have my point of the principle, and you rightly have pointed out your side, which is if you raise the fees, then you lose membership, and you come out even worse. So thank you for your answer.
Thank you. We have time for one more question.
Our final question will come from Joe Mayo with Delina Law Group.
Hi there. I keep hearing about excellence, and I keep hearing that mentioned, the excellence. As a member of the 1982 and 1983 pistol team, I was a collegiate All-American in all three sports, set 10 national records, was the silver medalist in the 82 air pistol competition, to which my teammate Larry DeShane was actually the national champion. I believe there was at least half a dozen national champions in the pistol team, and at least a couple of dozen All-American pistol shooters as well, and over the history of the team. And I believe there was actually three national championship teams in the last 20 years. And I can't understand. We're kind of in shock that we could not be talking about excellence and keeping the pistol team, because it's just probably the most successful team in MIT history, if I'm not mistaken. And it seems to me like we're acting more like sheep cutting grass than beavers building dams. I mean, our mascot's the beaver. We should be propping up the dam and supporting it. And I think that if you want to really maintain excellence, the pistol team is one way to really do it. So that's just my input for the day.
Joe, we met with a pistol team a couple of weeks ago, and their main concern in going to a club was their access to the championship. And I want to point out that the pistol team is not governed by the NCAA, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which most of our teams fall under the auspices of. Our pistol team falls under the auspices, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, of the NRA?
Yes.
The National Rifle Association. So being able to compete at the highest level for our pistol program still exists if they compete as a club. Army, Navy are all club sports. A number of the Citadel, Army, Navy, Yale, et cetera, someone showing me the list, all compete as club teams. So when we win these national championships, we are beating those teams that are functioning as a club. So I think that level of excellence you're referring to is still available to our student athletes who want to participate in pistol. At this point, I believe we are wrapping the phone call up. Again, I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be on the call today. I will make one final statement that I know in my role and as my responsibility as the athletic director, I represent the finality of these decisions, but I want all of you to know that personally I have found this to be very difficult and very painful. I feel for you as alumni, and I feel for our current student athletes. I appreciate your questions, I appreciate your support, and I hope I can continue to appreciate your support and your support in transitioning some of these programs to the club level. Thank you for your attention today, and as I said, please feel free to email me if you need further explanation on anything. Thank you.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.